Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is June 17th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 32 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will be reading aphorism number 92 and 93 today. But first, of course, I start off with a little chat about what's happening and affirmations, inspirations, and things like that. I wanted to let you know that Vera and I have noticed that the number of archived downloads of the show have been picking up. We're so excited that people are getting back into their studies of Hahnemann's Organon with us, and I applaud everyone. And now I'm going to kind of go back in time. In a previous show, we spoke about aphorism number 91, and learning about before and after the disease and being sure to wait, to be sure. And I kind of call that being sure and waiting instead of being sorry. And then I realized I was doing a takeoff of something that people usually say, a little quote that is, better safe than sorry. So I kind of wanted to find out where that quote came from. And there was a little bit of history behind it. In 1837, someone named S. Lover was writing something called Rory O'More, and he said, quote, just counting them. Is there any harm in that? Said the tinker. It's better be sure than sorry. It's kind of a funny accent. I think it's supposed to be Southern. And then in 1933, there was a Radio Times show, and it said, and I think it was a commercial for Halls. It says, cheap distempers very soon crack or fade. Better be safe than sorry. Ask for Halls. And today I think there is a product named Halls. It's sort of like Vicks VapoRub or something that you use for a cough. Or maybe it's something for the skin, or distemper, who knows. And then there was in 1972, Wilson wrote Hide and Seek. And he said, it's not that I want to shut you in, but, well, it's better to be safe than sorry. And the most recent one that came up was the Garfield comic strip in 2002, in the Washington Post. He said, you're breaking up with me, but we've never dated. You don't want to take any chances? Better safe than sorry. So that's really what it's all about, being better safe than sorry and not to take any chances, not to take any risks. I think that Vera has tuned in. That's really great. And I wanted to ramble on a little bit more. She was not taking any chances with her backing up her computer this morning. You hear me, Vera?
Yeah, hi, Debbie.
Hi.
My antivirus was backing up, but it's finished, I think.
Better safe than sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so I just wanted to do a little bit more review, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
We started off with the case management aphorisms 245 to 263. Then we have been working the administration of the medications, which were aphorisms 272 to 285. And lately we've been taking the case, aphorisms 82 through 104, where Hahnemann tells us how to do the note-taking while both observing with all of our senses about the patient and then asking the patient to also be self-observant with all of his or her senses. And we've really come a long way. And most importantly, we are being observant about changes from times in a person's life, from the present time back to the past. And I was thinking about what you told us last time, Vera. You gave an umbrella statement, questions, questions, questions. And I thought, well, wow, maybe you're indicating three types of questions. The kind that you don't ask, like you don't ask true or false or yes or no questions. And the kind that you do ask, like asking open-ended questions for the patient to tell the character, quality, particulars, like the location and the frequency, the modalities, the nature and descriptions of the pains, and the defining discharges, and all those yucky adjectives or very pleasant adjectives and sensations by the patient. And then the third type of question is the physical diagnostic questions of specifics after you've already gathered all of those other types of information and the generals. And it can be quite engaging as an investigation into the nature of the human being and into our emotions, our mind, our mental. It's kind of like finding the pieces to a puzzle until you come to an understanding of what needs to be healed and then selecting the remedy with all of these characteristics. There was some discussion about cultural norms, and this also must be taken into consideration. I think we're going to talk about that again today. I've
well,
rambled
we'll see.
On long enough.
Mm-hmm. I would just qualify a couple of things. First of all, we're not just looking for information between the present and the past. We're looking very specifically how is the person in their sick state and how are they different in the healthy state. What's different now when they're sick? I mean, it could be when someone is healthy, they're miserable, and when they're sick, they're smiling the whole time. Those smiles relate to the sick state. Those smiles are not this person's state of health, even though we like to think that just being happy the whole time is a very healthy thing. The other thing is...
If somebody is miserable all the time, that's a healthy state?
If during their healthier state, they're miserable the whole time, and then they become, if they're a morose type of person, and then they become sick, and they become extremely affable, very easygoing. Sadly,
right.
In this person, as we're giving remedies, as they heal, they will go back to being morose. This is not the way to cure their moroseness with a natural disease. These are the cases where a change in mentality, also especially in mental patients, and Hahnemann relates to this later on in the Organon. You can have a mental patient who is a fairly miserable so-and-so when he's well, but when he's sick, he's very kind or very friendly. And part of the thing that the family don't like so much, but as this patient recovers his senses, as his mental situation improves, he may go back to being less easygoing, less affable, and to being unpleasant. On the simple level, we can see that sometimes. There are some people who are extremely easygoing, and they're easygoing because they've suppressed the things they really want. And their easygoing attitudes are part of their sick state. And when we give a remedy, one remedy I've seen this to happen with for sure is carcinosin. When you give the remedy... Mm-hmm. The person starts being more argumentative, less willing to please, less easygoing, and that can happen. And then you need to look at the state before and see where is the healthy one. So sometimes for a person to argue, to insist, to put his foot down, that's actually a healthier state than agreeing to everything and repressing everything on the inside.
Right. We're really going into a definition of health, aren't we, today?
I don't know how much we're going into it, but we touch on everything as we move along.
Okay.
I think in order to start Aphorism 92, we need to do a brief recap of Aphorism 91. In 91, okay. Hahnemann told us that if a patient comes to us and they've been on a medicine, if possible, we should stop the medicine, or the GP should stop the medicine. Usually this is talking about conventional drugs. But it could possibly relate to other types of alternative. It could possibly relate to Chinese herbs, that kind of thing, Bach flower remedies. There are medicines, remedies, any other inputs which we may want to stop for several days to give us a true idea of the original form of the disease. So where this is possible, we do it. And in 92, Hahnemann will tell us what to do where it's not possible. Okay, so I'm reading 92. But if it be a disease of a rapid course, and if its serious character admit of no delay, the physician must content himself with observing the morbid condition, altered though it might be by medicines, if he cannot ascertain what symptoms were present before the employment of the medicines, in order that he may at least form a just apprehension of the complete picture of the disease in its actual condition, that is to say, of the conjoint malady formed by the medicinal and original diseases, which from the use of inappropriate drugs is generally more serious and dangerous than was the original disease, and hence demands prompt and efficient aid. And by thus tracing out the complete picture of the disease, he will be enabled to combat it with a suitable homeopathic remedy, so that the patient shall not fall a sacrifice to the injurious drugs he has swallowed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here...
I want to acknowledge that there have been there's 18 people on the chat right now, and we're getting quite a bit of comments coming in. I just want to acknowledge that we do see that, and we will get to them in time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go ahead with your explanation.
Okay, not so much an explanation, just a pointing out or a summary. One of the things that comes out here so often, I don't know about you, Debbie, I get people asking me, they say, well, I thought I would try homeopathy, but I needed something fast.
Fast. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You tell us that one?
Well, actually, that's something very common in India. I've seen that as kind of an obstacle to people going to a homeopath in that region, because they always say it's stereotypic that it is slow acting. So,
mm-hmm.
Yes, I have heard it.
So here also, Hahnemann is giving us a situation where we have no time. We have to treat straight away. So we have no choice. If the patient has been taking medicines, we treat the picture, including the medicine picture.
Mm-hmm.
And Hahnemann on joint malady.
Okay, so we're fading in and out today, but basically we do have to include the disease picture and what happens in the case of implementation of a drug that affects the human body also in certain cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think she's still with us.
Yes, I'm still with you. You're still with me.
Okay. Yes. So if it be a disease of a rapid course, meaning that the disease is coming on quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what he's saying? He must
that things are moving quickly. It's not necessarily rapid onset, but it's rapid progress.
Okay.
So it's like if you
progress.
See someone, if you see someone who is sick and the sickness is acute, that's not the time to say, well, now I think you should stop your medications for a week. There
uh-huh.
is no time. And not
okay.
only is there no time just because of the drugging, what we're looking at is a conjoint malady. It's a mixed disease of the original and the medicinal, and that's how we see it in this type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Hahnemann reminds us that this is more serious and dangerous than the original disease.
Okay. So we know that two diseases cannot live in the same body at the same time, but in
two similar
cases,
similar.
It's similar,
two
right?
Similar
I wanted to define that with that word, mm-hmm. two similar diseases. So in this case, it's a compound mixture because there are two dissimilar diseases.
Well,
the dissimilar effect.
Here also, we're talking about conventional medicines. So conventional medicines don't work on the basis of either clear opposition, sometimes they do, or similarity. They work in their own way and can create a medicinal disease in the patient. So we've got the original disease and the medicinal disease. And these have joined together, and the patient's situation is getting worse.
Okay. And so what does he tell us?
So what he's telling us is we look at the medicinal and original as a mixed disease. We look at the picture that's presenting now in the change from health, accepting the medicinal impact as part of the mixed disease. And we look for the similar to this mixed disease.
Okay, can you help me with that? Look for the similar to the mixed disease?
Let's try with examples and see if we can hammer this out together. Let's say a person has flu and they're coughing and they're sneezing and they're feeling generally rather ill. For some reason, this person with flu was also prescribed an antibiotic. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The antibiotic in this particular case was not relevant to the flu, but the antibiotic is doing its own study. And so now you've got two sets of symptoms. You have side effects to the antibiotic, and you have flu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it's all presenting at the same time. So you can't separate anything out. And in the meantime, this person has had a bad reaction to this mixture of what's going on. And the fever all of a sudden starts going up very high. He starts coughing very deeply from the chest and problematic. And you can see this is going along a progress where it's turning into something else. It's a conjoint malady.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixed disease. So what do we do?
Okay.
The only thing we can do, we take the symptoms of this mixed disease because we don't have time. We don't want this to develop into a life-threatening situation, or perhaps it already is. We don't have time. So we take the symptoms, the mixed symptoms, whatever's presenting, whether it's from the antibiotic side effect or some kind of side effect of the clash. Maybe he was given more than one antibiotic, which also happened. Maybe there were some contraindications in the person's medical history to that particular antibiotic. We take the symptoms that are presenting to us. This is what Hahnemann tells us. We trace the complete picture of the disease that is presenting to us, which is a mix of the original and the medicinal, conventional medicinal disease.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find something that is similar to that mix.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I understand it. If anyone has any comments, we're happy to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm thinking is that if you have symptoms, let's say this is this flu-type symptoms of cough, runny nose, congestion, fever, and you take either over-the-counter or a given drug from a medical physician, then those are usually used as a suppressant. So it changes the course of the disease. Is that correct?
Well, in the example that I gave, I was giving the example more of a drug reaction, but perhaps a classic example of what this aphorism is talking about is when someone has cancer and is going through chemo.
Mm-hmm.
And if the situation is moving fast, we have a problem. Do we take the symptoms before the chemo, or do we take the symptoms including the chemo? And from this aphorism, I would understand that in that type of situation, we take the whole shebang. We take the symptoms of the original disease plus the symptoms of the chemo altogether. But I know in that particular situation there are lots of differences of opinion, and again, any comment is welcome. Deborah,
right.
We don't have much time. I suggest we move on to 93, since we wanted
okay.
to complete that aphorism.
Okay, good. So do you want to read or you want me to?
Go ahead, Shreet.
Okay, if the disease has been brought on a short time, or in the case of a chronic affection, a considerable time previously by some obvious cause, then the patient or his friends, when questioned privately, will mention it either spontaneously or when carefully interrogated. You want me to go ahead with the...
Yeah, sure.
Any causes of a disgraceful character which the patient or his friends do not like to confess, at least not voluntarily, the physician must endeavor to elicit by skillfully framing his questions or by private information. To these belong poisoning or attempted suicide, onanism, indulgence in ordinary or unnatural debauchery, excesses in wine, cordials, punch, and other ardent beverages or coffee, overindulgence in eating generally or in some particular food of a hurtful character, infection with venereal disease or itch, unfortunate love, jealousy, domestic infelicity, worry, grief on account of some family misfortune, ill usage, balked revenge, injured pride, embarrassment of a pecuniary nature, superstitious fear, hunger, or an imperfection in the private parts, a rupture, a prolapse, and so forth. He's covered all the bases.
I'm not sure I'm happy to see my coffee in the same sentence with venereal disease or itch, but...
He puts it everywhere, huh?
Yeah, and interestingly enough, Hahnemann does not mention smoking.
Ah, his one vice.
This, to me, restores him to the world of the mortals.
Yes, I suppose so. I wonder why he did that. He left off smoking, any kind of smoking even.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think this is definitely complex. You have a patient sitting in front of you. How are you going to ask your patient, do you indulge in orgies on a regular basis? How are you going to phrase that particular question?
You go very slowly. Well, basically, a lot of people have an intake form where it's a checklist of things, just as if you would go to the regular physician and you have an account. Is it on the list?
Yeah.
And it's
orgies,
twice
a week.
you have a regular accounting of diseases, you know, that they've had in their life, vaccinations, and also their habits, how much water they take or what their regular diet is. And now you're including things like, have you ever taken drugs? Have you gone to prison? have you been pulled over by the police? I don't
I would be very interested to know how any homeopath finds out information about in an adult, not in a child, about onanism or about indulgence in ordinary or unnatural debauchery. I'd be very curious to know how other homeopaths find this information out.
Well, people might tell you about the venereal disease.
Yeah.
Because they're showing those symptoms and it's very obvious. Or if they've had injured pride, you know, that might come out in a later session. A lot of these different emotional kinds of things. For physical habits that they've indulged in, kind of look in their face, I don't know, and look in their eyes and see what they say. I guess over time, they're going to cough it up. They're going to say something that might hint, maybe even they want to tell you. And they're trying to find a way to do that and still retain their honor and their pride. So saving face for themselves.
I don't
Maybe
know.
You
I found
give an example.
I've
I was
found
say,
people...
give an example from your own life.
Thank you, Debbie. I'll keep my own life.
I'm kidding, of course.
I'll keep my own excesses to myself for the meantime, natural or otherwise. It's very interesting. It has so much to do with the rapport with the patient. And I think a lot of this information also is very much something that we want to find out. Again, we don't want to find out if a person has bad habits or otherwise. We do want to find out if they never had them before and in their sixth state they have them. And
right.
Perhaps like you're saying, as we're questioning, if we observe closely, we'll see the changes in their faces. We'll see that they seem to be on the verge of saying something or bringing something up.
Mm-hmm.
But very often, I think we won't know until sometimes after a remedy has worked and they feel free of whatever it is they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Mm-hmm.
I think that's happened sometimes. I think I remember sometimes in cases that's happened that something very private has come up after it's passed because the patient is so happy that it's passed and that they're not dealing with whatever the habit or activity is. I haven't heard anyone say that they're very relieved they no longer want coffee, though. That I haven't heard.
I guess that's on the bottom of the list. He needs to move it down lower. Or other ardent. He puts punch in there. What does he mean? Somebody spiked the punch? I don't know.
Well, punch is originally alcoholic.
Oh.
Okay. Now in the modern
punch.
World, it seemed more like a fruit cordial. But punch was made with wine. Still is frequently made with wine or with other liquors or vodka or whatever.
Uh huh.
Well, or just with whatever you have in the cupboard.
Uh-huh. And this attempted suicide he has in here and poisonings, people are being framed. I don't know.
I think
he's
actually
really
that's
gotten...
very...
Go ahead.
We were talking briefly about the cultural issue, which seems to be popping up now the whole time. And there are certain cultures where people won't say, if it's a culture where alcohol is banned, it may be difficult to get them to say that lately they've been craving alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
So that kind of thing is a sort of cultural heads up. In addition, if we know the person sitting opposite us belongs to a culture where alcohol is forbidden, then we need to be very careful in finding out this information.
That's true.
Right. There needs to be a huge, good trust in all this.
So, So we are talking a lot about cultural mores and what's acceptable. Okay, we have only just a minute left, and if we want to tidy this up for today, I feel like the title for me is. What have you been up to lately? I don't know. That's my title. Are you feeling embarrassed? Are you feeling embarrassed today? And can we discuss your private personal affairs? I think my title would be Trial by Homeopath. Oh. A good one, especially following up on the previous court cases we did. Right. Okay. I appreciate everyone who has been here. I didn't get to announce any of the threads on the comment board here, but I think they're having a huge discussion. So get in there and post your comments. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with us. See you tomorrow. Oh, is this the end of this week? See you on Sunday. Yep. Bye-bye. Okay. Bye. Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brooke.
on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.